Pashat Pinchas. We have to make up last week's parsha. We never did it. So maybe Thursday night we'll see what's doing. Or maybe on the trip to the Golan if that happens. If not, then on Friday we have to make up the class. The end of last week's parsha, we had seen that in spite of all of Bilam's attempt to curse the Jewish people, he was unsuccessful. But before he left, he told Balak, the king of Moab, he said, I have one word of advice for you. If you want them to fall, then the God of the Jewish people, he hates when people go with women unjustly, when they have illicit relationships. And if you want to make the Jewish people fall, then entice them. And Balak listened to Bilam's advice. They set up tents with old women outside selling goods and young women inside. And the Jewish people came to buy, like they always bought their goods from the neighbors. And the woman would say, I have better goods on the inside. And then the Jewish man would instantly go inside the tent and he'd find a woman dressed enticingly. And she would offer him wine to drink. And when he drank the wine, his heart would burn within him. And he'd desire the woman, and she'd say, first bow down to my idol. And he'd say, no, I can't bow down to the idol. And she'd say, okay, then this is the idol that everyone goes to the bathroom from. Go to the bathroom front. And he'd be hesitant, but being that there was a woman there, and going to the bathroom involved getting undressed, and he was hoping something else was coming. So he was willing, and ultimately the men fell, and they did go with the Moabite and the Midianite women. Now, the Moabites were more legitimate, so to speak, in their fear of the Jewish people because part of their land had been conquered by Sihon, and the Jews had conquered Sihon and conquered that land. So land which, up until recently, had been theirs was now in the Jewish people's hands. And the Jewish people were camping next to them. When the Jewish people camped near them, so Hashem told them, you're camping near the Moabites and near the Ammonites, two peoples who stem back to Lot, Avraham Avinu's nephew. They're descendants of Lot. Lot, when he ran away from Sodom was overturned. This goes back 200-300 years. When Sodom was overturned, so Lot ran away, and he stayed in a cave with his daughters, and his daughters were scared the whole world was destroyed, just as Sodom was destroyed. So they had relationship with their father, and they had each one had a son. One called the son her son Ammon, the other called their son Moab, and these two children, their descendants, formed the people of the Ammonites and the Moabites. So Hashem told the Jewish people, you're camping near the people of Ammon, the people of Moab. Don't attack them. Don't lay siege upon them. The Ammonites don't even scare them. So the people understood by inference, but the Moabites, they could scare them. So when they passed near the Moabites, they passed with their armor, they passed in full gear, and the Moabites got scared. Well, the Moabites got scared, so they didn't know what to do. They called Bilam. Bilam tried to curse the Jewish people, but Hashem didn't want to curse them. So the Moabites went to their last resort. They sent their women out, and this way they caused the Jewish people to sin. The Midianites, they didn't have so much to fear. And they joined the fight, and they sent their women. Not only did they send their women, but if we go back historically, where does Midian come from? Who knows? Bet you no one knows. You're a guest this Shabbos by someone. Yitro lived in Midian. He was one of the Midianites. But the Midianites go back, their lineage stems back to Avram Avinu. Avram, after his wife Sarah passed away, married a woman by the name of Keturah. Chazal tell us Keturah is really Hagar. Correct. And he had children from her. One of the children he had was Midian. And Midian's descendants were the people of Midian. So the Midianites are second cousins, just like the Arabs are, right? If you're going to say Ishmael is our cousin, the Arabs, so too are the Midianites. Well, the Midianites were settled in a land that was distant from where we were. Many of the Midianites, it seems, were nomads. They lived by camel and they traveled. And they had no reason to join this fight, but they did. And the truth is that the Moabites had asked the Midianites to join this fight. Even though the Moabites and the Midianites were constant enemies, here they joined forces against the Jewish people. And the Midianites had five heads of the family, just as the Pasuk tells us in Bereishis that Midian had five children. What does it say? Says Ephah, Va'efer, Va'chanoch, Va'avido, Ve'eldo'o. Five children Midian had, and they had five kings in Midian: Evi and Rechem and Tzur and Hur and Reva. Those are the names of the five kings. Well, the top king was Tzur, and Tzur had a daughter. Her name was Cozbi. So Tzur sent his daughter Cozbi, and he told her, "You don't go with anyone. You get into the top leader. I want you to make Moshe sin. Don't go with anyone but the leader." So this girl got all dressed up and came to the Israeli camp, and she didn't want to go with anyone but the leader. Until the leader of the tribe of Shimon, Zimri, the son of Salu, who was a man who liked women, that's why his name was Zimri. Chazal tell us that a man who has relationships, often many bad things happen to him. He has bad breath as he ages. His hair starts falling out. He has a lot of hair in the places where he wouldn't want hair. The halacha says that the sperm is a man's strength. And when a person emits a lot of it, then he loses his strength. And he ages early. And Chazal tell us Zimri was called Zimri because he had a lot of relationships, and therefore his features changed, his face changed, and the egg that's all stirred and mixed up is called an egg that's muzar, mixed. Today we say muzar about anything that's strange, but muzar really means an egg that's mixed. And the letters in muzar are similar to the name of Zimri. So Zimri and muzar are similar letters. Chazal tells us that's why it was called Zimri, because his face was changed from having so much relationships. And he grabbed her by her hair in the front, and he said, "You want the leader? I'm the leader." So he went in front of Moshe, and he said, "Moshe, here's a Midianite girl. I'm taking her. And if you have a problem with that, then tell me who gave you permission to go with the Midianite girl." Well, he took her in a tent in front of all the Jewish people, and his tribe, the tribe of Shimon, surrounded his tent because they had all sinned, and they were scared. Moshe had gotten a commandment to kill the sinners. And now they went to their leader. They said, "Zimri, save us. Don't let us all get killed." So this is what he did. He took her in a tent in front of everyone. Pinchas heard this. He said, "Moshe, you taught us that if a person goes with a non-Jewish woman, so if he marries her, so that the Torah says is forbidden. But what happens if he's not marrying her? Zimri isn't marrying Cozbi. He's not marrying the daughter of Tzur, the daughter of the Midianite king. He's taking her now to have an illicit relationship." So then the halacha is that a person who is a kanoi, one who is zealous for God's name, he can kill him during the time that he is having the relationship. And he has to catch him in the act. Once they separate, so he can't touch him. Maybe we'll give him patch, we'll punish him. He's a bad person, but you can't kill him from the Torah's perspective. Rabbinically, we have other prohibitions, but we're talking about now biblically. Biblically, what's forbidden is to marry them, and the minute that they're having a relationship, at that second you could kill them. If you're a kanoi. What's a kanoi? So that's a person that's on a very specific level. It doesn't mean someone who sees it and he gets angry and he says, "I'm going to kill him." So maybe he's a hade. That's not a kanoi. A kanoi is one who is legitimately a zealous one. One who Bezdin would agree that he's on that level. Yeah, you want to ask something? Moshe's wife was a girl from Midian. Moshe, before the Torah was given, married a girl from Midian. After the Torah was given, she became Jewish. It's not like these men who were taking non-Jewish women and having relationships with them. It's not the same thing. But in the heat of the moment, that was his challenge. Yeah?
I have a question. If I could understand you saying that is that a punishment for having a sexual relationship with a non-Jewish woman?
Correct.
Yeah?
I'm saying that biblically, the Torah says we're only forbidden to marry them. If a person has a relationship with a woman who is not Jewish, but he doesn't marry her, then that's forbidden. But biblically, we don't kill him. Only at the minute when he's having the relationship, then you could kill him. A minute afterwards, you cannot kill him. It is forbidden. and the prohibition was expanded by Chazal at different stages in our history. It was expanded to different levels. Today we don't even stay alone in a room with a non-Jewish woman for fear of what might happen. Mm. So it's been expanded, but that's all biblically. That's all rabbinically. Biblically, what's forbidden is to marry them. Any relationship that's not of marriage, we can only biblically kill him the minute they're having the relationship. A minute afterwards, we can't touch him. So it's not the right thing to do. But you can't say, I'm allowed to kill him, he did something wrong. So Pinchas wanted to take his spear inside, but he was scared they would catch him. So he leaned on it and he started limping. So they asked him, what do you want here? So he said, I want her too. So he said, oh, he's one of us, a sinner too. So they let him in. When they let him in, he stuck his spear through the tent, and at the edge of the spear there came out the pieces of the body that they were attached with, and everyone saw what they had done inside, and that he killed them justly. And now the people of the tribe of Shimon wanted to kill him. So the long midrashim, if we'll ever get to learn last week's parsha, we'll discuss that. Bottom line, everyone started making fun of him. They said, Pinchas? Who's Pinchas? He's the son of Elazar, the Kohen Gadol. Yeah, we know he's the son of Elazar. But you know, Elazar married one of Yitro's daughters. Just like Moshe married one of Yitro's daughters, well, his nephew, Elazar, Aaron's son, who is currently the Kohen Gadol, he also married one of Yitro's daughters. So his grandfather, Pinchas' grandfather, his mother's father was Yitro. Well, Yitro used to serve idols. Who's he to come against our leader? Pinchas. He's the grandson of Yitro. He's the grandson of one who used to serve every idol in the book. He's coming against the Nasi in Israel. Who's Pinchas? So our parsha begins, Hashem says, Pinchas, you know who Pinchas is? He's the son of Elazar. You know who Elazar is? Don't look at that grandfather, look at the other grandfather. He's the son of Aaron, the Kohen. Pinchas' grandfather from his father's side was Aaron. So Hashem says, Pinchas, the son of Elazar, son of Aaron, the Kohen, he caused that my anger leave the Jewish people, because when the Jewish people were sinning, and Cosby was on that rooftop with that tent, together with Zimri, so there started a plague among the Jewish people. 24,000 people died. God was angry. The Jewish people were sinning. That plague stopped the minute Pinchas killed Zimri and Cosby. So Hashem says, Pinchas, he's the son of Elazar. He's the son of Aaron, the Kohen. He caused my anger to leave the Jewish people when he took my vengeance from the Jewish people. And I didn't wipe them out with my anger. Yeah.
So why didn't the men ask the woman to convert?
They weren't interested in marrying them. They were interested in the thrill of the moment. No one was interested in living with them long term. They weren't interested in marrying them and building a family. Now, let's remember, historically, where are we standing? We're on the verge of entering the land of Israel. We're standing by the Jordan. We're across from Jericho. We want to enter. We're holding, Aaron's already passed away. We're the last year in our desert. And the people who are supposed to die in the desert have finished dying. We're about to enter, and we have this downfall. If you recall, in the second year that we were in the desert, so Aaron was anointed the Kohen Gadol. The Jewish people had sinned in the Egel, and therefore the firstborns were no longer going to be Kohanim or Levim, whatever their task was supposed to be. And Aaron became the Kohen Gadol. His sons became Kohanim. Well, what happened with his grandsons? So Chazal tell us that Aaron became a Kohen and his children became Kohanim. They were all anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha. His grandchildren did not become Kohanim. Only the children that he and his children would have from that point on are Kohanim. But the children that were born beforehand, his grandchildren that were born before this anointment, they did not become Kohanim. So Pinchas, well, he was born before this anointment. So Pinchas was never a Kohen. Pinchas was an ordinary Jew. His father was a Kohen, his grandfather was a Kohen, but he wasn't a Kohen. Hashem says, now, because of what he did, I'm giving him a treaty of peace. I'm giving him a treaty. He's going to be a Kohen forever, him and his offsprings. And we're going to see that he wasn't only a Kohen, he was the Kohen Gadol, and he lived a very long life. He was our judge. He was our leader during the period of the judges. He lived past Yeshua. He lived well into the time of the judges. So Pinchas was given a treaty of peace. Notice, what did he do? He did an act of murder, you would say. No, it wasn't murder. He killed the person that deserved to be killed. And Hashem says, I'm giving him a pact of peace. And this shows us that when a person does something righteously, then even if it's the act of killing, what's deep in his heart is the sense of peace. It's not that he wants to spill blood. No, he has to do what he has to do, and the rest of his life he wants to live in peace. And that's one of the blessings that God gave the Jewish people, that even though we might have times when we have to go to war and we might have to kill people, so this won't affect our personalities. A person could be at war and he could become a vicious person from it. He could come to the home front and run his house like a soldier. He could come home and say, I want supper now. And if his kids misbehave, then boy, are they going to get a whipping. So Chazal tell us, no. The Jewish people have a special blessing that even though they have to fight wars, when they come home from the wars, they're going to be gentle human beings. Pinchas had a period where he had to jump up and be a kanoi. He had to be zealous. He killed the person. Okay, what's he getting in as repayment from Hashem? He's getting a treaty of peace. And this is a treaty between Pinchas and God. For him and his children, they're going to be Kohanim forever because he atoned for the Jewish people and he was zealous for the name of God. Now, we were discussing everything as though we know everything. We mentioned who was the sinner and who was the girl. The truth is that in last week's parsha doesn't say who the sinner was. It says a man got up and he took a girl and he went into the tent in front of Moshe and everyone. It doesn't say who this man was, doesn't say who the girl was. Only in our parsha, after Pinchas is given his reward and God tells us how just Pinchas was and what a reward he's going to receive, do we mention who was the person that was killed? We mention his name and his tribe and that he was either the Nasi or he was the head of household in the tribe of Shimon and who the woman who was killed was. Their names really are not mentioned in last week's parsha. And the reason behind it is that at the same place where Hashem gave Pinchas' Yichus, Hashem told us who Pinchas came from, what Pinchas' lineage was, so at the same place Hashem also identified who the sinners were. Now Hashem told Moshe to tell the Jewish people that we're going to have an enmity towards the Midianites. There's going to be a hatred from the Jewish people towards the Midianites for having caused them to sin. Chazal tell us that a person who causes someone else to sin is worse than someone that kills him. If you kill a person, so you harmed him in this world. If you cause them to sin, you've harmed him in the world to come as well. So we have a hatred towards the Midianites, which we will see come to fruition later on, not in this week's parasha. We're going to see it at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. We go to war against them. We avenge what they've done to us. What they do, they cause us to sin. So we're going to take that out against them later on. Vayhi acharei ha-magefa. Let's see if we have a tikkun here. Okay, yeah.
The reason for the is like a small yud. Pinchas' name. I came across that last year. I don't know what it
means. Well, there's reason. I don't know what the reason is. I don't know why it's a small yud. If you remind me, I'll look. I don't remember. There is a reason. We have a tradition where we have small letters and big letters. Yeah, I don't remember what the reason is. It's a good question. I don't know. Okay. I don't know. In the Sefer Torah, we have breaks. And usually the breaks are at the end of a segment. At the end of a parsha, we have a break of a whole line. In other sections, we have a break of a few letters. And in other sections, we have a blank space till the end of that line. So it usually appears in between different topics or different chapters. Chapters isn't the right word, but the equivalent of chapters. Over here, we have an exception. In the middle of a pasuk, suddenly we have a break. Vayhi acharei ha-magefa, after the plague, break. We have a long blank space, new line. Hashem tells Moshe and Elazar to count the Jewish people. So some explain that the reason is because this isn't speaking about the plague that happened in the last expirsha. This isn't referring to that plague where 24,000 people died. This is a new story. And it was after the plague. Which plague? The 40 years in which the Jewish people died in the desert. Now, that period is over, new period. That's why we have a long break. So the question is, then why do you have to be in one pasuk? Maybe to signify this, would we have lost so much if we were in two pasukim? I don't know. I don't know why God put it in one pasuk. I don't know. But anyways, the long break is to show us that this is the end of the story of the 40 years. The plague is over. Now everyone that was supposed to die died. All the men that were supposed to die, no women died. The women didn't do anything wrong. And Hashem tells Moshe and Elazar, he's now the Kohen Gadol, to count the Jewish people. The purpose of this count is because we're holding by entering the land of Israel, and the land has to be divided to the different tribes. So each tribe is counted. And on the one hand, God tells us to divide the land based upon the numbers, meaning a larger tribe gets a larger section. On the other hand, God tells us to divide it by lot, to draw a lottery. So Chazal tell us they took the land of Israel and they divided it. They figured out how much each section is worth, because the land wasn't divided based upon area, it was divided based upon value. And they divided it into sections. And then they had a tradition, going back to Yaakov Avinu, which tribe was supposed to get which section. But God said, this is the way you'll do it. You'll put lots with each section and lots with each tribe. And then you'll call the Nasi, the leader of that tribe, and you're going to draw a lot with a section and a lot with the name of a tribe. The Kohen Gadol Elazar is going to stand there, and with Ruach HaKodesh he's going to say, if the lot of this tribe comes up, then it should be this lot. And that Nasi is going to come, and miraculously he's going to pick up the lots, and his lot is going to come out, and it's going to be exactly what Elazar said, going back to the tradition of Yaakov Avinu, and the lot itself is going to speak. That piece of paper or parchment, whatever it was, is going to speak and say, I am the section of this tribe. We find that the tribes had claims. This one said, I don't like what I got. The other has got more, got better. I need more. But in the time of division, God said, I'm doing miracles. It's going to be very clear who's supposed to get what. And these were the miracles that took place there. The Nasi came up, and Elazar would tell him in advance, if this is your tribe, then this is the section that's supposed to come up, and he'd pick up lots, and that's what came out, exactly what it was supposed to be, exactly according to the tradition that they had going back to Yaakov. Now we have a counting of the tribe of Levi. It's unclear why Levi had to be counted here. They weren't getting a section in the land like all the other tribes. They had specific cities, but they weren't given land because they weren't supposed to work the land. And possibly out of respect to the tribe of Levi, they were counted, because if we're counting everyone else, so counting is a sign of honor. They're worth counting. The tribe of Levi, that's God's chosen tribe, also shouldn't be left out. As though we're counting everyone, we're not counting them. The pasuk tells us that when they were counted, there were no men left over from the counting that Moshe and Aaron did of the people of Israel before they sinned. So Moshe and Aaron had counted the people. All those that were 20 years and up passed away. We had seen a medrash that said those that were 60 and up didn't have to pass away, just between 20 and 60. And now there were no men left over. Chazal tells us there were no men left over, but women there were, because when the men sinned and they said, we're going back, after they heard what the spies had said. So the women said, you want to go, you go, but we want to go in, give us the land. So the women didn't deserve to die, so we had a lot of old women. Maybe they were married again, I don't know. Maybe they got remarried. Yeah, they lived a lot longer. The only leftovers were Kalev ben Yefune and Yoshua ben Nun. Now, the land was supposed to be divided. And there was a man by the name of Tzlafchad, who was a tzaddik. Not only he was a tzaddik, but his father Hefer was a tzaddik. And his father Gilad was a tzaddik. And his father Machir was a tzaddik. And his father Menashe was a tzaddik. They were all from the tribe of Yosef, right? Menashe was the son of Yosef. So how do we know they were all tzaddikim? Because his daughters, he had only daughters, Tzlafchot, his daughters came forth and they said to Moshe and Elazar and all the Sanhedrin, they said, our father passed away in the desert. And he wasn't one of the sinners. He wasn't part of Korach. He wasn't part of those that complained. He just died a normal death. Chazal say either he died a normal death on his bed, or when they said he died with his own sin, it means that he was the one that was gathering wood on Shabbos. So he sinned, he died, but he didn't deserve to lose his portion. Those that were with Korach, they didn't get a section in the land. Their children were in a problem. So they said our father didn't sin. Chazal say he was a tzaddik. And they teach us a special tradition here that it mentions Tzlafchot, and it mentions his father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather. It teaches us that when we have in Tanakh someone's name mentioned, and we see how his actions were. If we see he was a tzaddik, like over here, so then we say everyone that's mentioned with him, his father, his grandfather, they were all tzaddikim. If someone's mentioned and we see he's an evil person, like the person who killed Gedaliah, right? We have Tzom Gedaliah. Gedaliah was the leader that was left over in the land of Israel after the destruction of the temple. So he was appointed governor. And he was murdered. The person who murdered him, his name was Yishmael, but the Navi tells us the name was Yishmael, the son of Netanya, the son of Elishama. So Chazal tells why is he mentioned with his father and grandfather? To tell us that just like he was a bad person, so too his father and grandfather were bad people. So over here, Tzlafchot is mentioned, and his father and grandfather and great-grandfather and great-great-grandfather, and that tells they were all tzaddikim. We have the same tradition with regard to Nevim. If a Navi is mentioned with his father's name, so we say that means his father was also a Navi. If a Navi is mentioned with the name of a city, then we know that was a city. If it doesn't mention a city, then he came from Yerushalayim. So the daughters of Tzlafchot came forth, and they said to Moshe and Elazar and all the Nasiim and all the Sanhedrin, how'd they get everyone together? So there are two opinions as to what happened. One opinion says, well, they walked into this medrash and everyone was sitting together learning. The other opinion says they did like a person's supposed to do. They went to a regular bezin. Bezin said, we don't know the answer to your question. So they moved it up a rank. And it kept on going up until everyone came to Moshe and they said, we don't know what to do. What was their claim? They said, our father died. However he died. And he had no sons left over. And not only did he die without any sons left over, he was the firstborn to his father. So he's supposed to get double portion in the land of Israel. Why should his name be erased from the family just because he didn't have a son? Let us inherit our father. And if you say we can't inherit our father, so that means we're not considered his offsprings, so let our mother remarry. We know that a woman whose husband dies without leaving her any children, so then his brother has a mitzvah to marry her and have children to be named after the brother that passed away without children. So they said, which way do you want to go? If we're considered offsprings, let us inherit the land. If we're not considered his offspring, so then our mother should have to be married to his brother. So then his brother should have a mitzvah of Yibum to marry our mother. So Moshe heard this, and he didn't know what to do. He turned to Hashem and said, I don't know. Chazal tell us, why did Moshe not know? So there are two understandings as to why he didn't know. One understanding says that when Moshe set up the Sanhedrin, so he set up a lot of batei dinim. He said, you're in charge of these numbers and you're in charge of these numbers. He had Sanhedrin on different level. He had different batei dinim that were supposed to answer the questions. When he sent them up, he said, if you have a question, you go to the one on top of you. And if you guys have a question, you go to those on top of you. And then he said, V'adovar asher yikshem mikem, anything that's too hard for all of you, takrivun elai, bring it to me, ushmativ, and I'll listen to it. Hashem said, really? That Moshe Rabbeinu is not supposed to speak that way. So Hashem said, I'm going to show him there's going to be a situation where everyone's going to come to him, just like he said, and he won't know. So that shows us even Moshe Rabbeinu, who is so modest, Hashem watches every word we say, and if there's something that's lacking, so Hashem shows, at least people on Moshe Rabbeinu's level, that it's not so. Our famous prophet Shmuel, who was equated with Moshe and Aaron, also made that mistake. Shaul had come to the city seeking out Shmuel, And Shaul walked up to Shmuel, not knowing it was he, and he said, "Where's the Roeh? Where's the one who sees?" So Shmuel said, "I'm the Roeh. It's me." So Hashem said, "Really?" So when it came time to appoint a king, Shmuel was sent to Yishai's family, and he started looking. He saw the eldest son. He looked so great, and he said, "Wow, the Apsid Hashem is his anointed one." Hashem said, "Nope, I don't want him." And one by one, each son passed, and Hashem said, "I don't want them." And Shmuel, even though he thought he was supposed to see, Hashem said, "You see? You don't see." It doesn't say Hashem told him specifically, but we learn out that because Shmuel said, "I'm the one that sees," so Hashem showed him that there's going to be a time when he doesn't see. We have the same thing with the Malachim. Hashem sent two angels to overturn Sodom. The angels told Lot, we came here to overturn Sodom. So Hashem showed them there was a time when they had to overturn Sodom, and they said, "We can't do it until you leave, Lot. Hashem doesn't let us do it yet." And then they had to show that their strength comes from Hashem. And this is a rule in general. We have to be careful not to attribute the strengths and successes to ourselves. We have a tendency, the pasuk says, "Ivelet Adam tesalef darko." The foolishness of a person causes his way to be mixed up, not straight. "Ve'al Hashem yizaf libo." And then he turns to God and he says, "What'd you do to me?" When things go wrong, so then we attribute them to God. We say, "What'd God do to us?" The brothers, they sold Yosef. Yosef was in Egypt as a slave and ultimately became king. And then they came down to Egypt, and he played a trick on them, and he put the money back in their sacks. And they were traveling back home. Suddenly they found the money in their sacks. And they said, "God, what'd you do to us?" The money is there. Who did it? They did it to themselves. They sold Yosef, and that's why he became king, and that's why he was playing the trick on them. When things go good, so then Chazal tells our tendency, the Pasuk says, our tendency is, "Vayishman yishurun vayivat." When Am Yisrael gets fat, things are going good, they kick Hashem to the side, so to speak. The Pasuk says a person has a tendency to say, "It's my strength, it's my valor that's why I'm so wealthy." People attribute wealth to a person's wisdom. So what Chazal say, "Spnei Ashir Rabim, Spnei Nadiv Rabim." I don't remember. But it says that when there's a wealthy person, everyone thinks they could ask him for counsel. It must be he's very smart. Not necessarily. There's a certain amount of brains he must have, but it's not only brains. And we have to remember that. When things are going good, we have to remember to attribute them to Hashem. When things are going bad, we have to remember that we had a hand in it too. And our tendency is to do the other way around. So Moshe had to bring the case before Hashem, ask Hashem what to do. But it's a machlokas. That's one understanding. The other understanding says that really Moshe should have written this parsha. It should have been written in his name. But the daughters of Tzlafchat, they were very smart, and they came forth, and because they came forth, they had a special schus that Moshe couldn't answer them. He had to turn to Hashem, and Hashem answered and said, "Yes, no Tzlafchat, the daughters of Tzlafchat, they're right, their claim is correct and just." And the whole parsha is known as the parsha of the daughters of Tzlafchat. So that's a merit. Everyone knows the famous daughters of Tzlafchat. They're mentioned in the Torah. So they were zoche, they merited to have this because of what they did. They came forward. So this concept could be misused. I've seen it misused. People say, women have to come forward. So you see what happened to the daughters of Tzlafchat. So they're right in the correct context, like everything else. There are times when women have to come forward. We see the daughters of Tzlafchat, what they merited. And there are times when we say, "Kol kvuda bas melech pnima," the honor of the daughter of the king is that she's inside, that not everyone sees her. And the Jewish women are supposed to be like princesses. Not Japs, but princesses in the right way. That they're modest and they save their good looks for where they're supposed to be. So Hashem says the daughters of Tzlafchat are correct, they are just. And the way Hashem says, "Kain benos Tzlafchat doviros." So that's something to remember, that the word "kain" not only means yes, but it also means it is just, it is correct. What the daughters of Tzlafchat have claimed is correct. And they are going to inherit within their father what their father should have inherited, they'll get, including the double section that their father should have inherited because he's a Bechor. And here we have the rules of inheritance. That when a person dies, his sons inherit him. If he doesn't have sons, then his daughters inherit him. If he doesn't have daughters, it goes over to his brothers. If he doesn't have brothers, then it goes to his father's brothers. And if his father doesn't have brothers, so then we go to the closest relative. And there's a whole perek that discusses in the Gemara, and we have halachas. Most of them stem from these psukim. What are the laws of inheritance? There are specific laws. Hashem tells Moshe, go up to Har HaVarim. Go up to this mountain that's standing by the passes where people pass the Jordan. The mountain was also known as Har Nevo, the mountain of Nevo. And I want you to see the land that I'm going to give the Jewish people. The land that I've given the Jewish people. You'll see it, and then you'll pass away, just like Aaron passed away. Because you rebelled against my word in the desert of Tzin, when the nation fought, and you were supposed to do bigger Kiddush Hashem, and you didn't. So why do we have to have a repeat what the sin was? So Chazal tell us, the mashal is two women. One woman ate from fruits of Shvius. Not allowed to eat the fruits of Shvius before they're fully ripened. So she ate the dates of Shvius before they're fully ripened. So she did a sin, and if she was warned and she did it nonetheless, then she gets lashes. Another woman went with a man and had an illicit relationship. So in certain circumstances, we whip a woman for doing that. They're both brought into Bezdin together, and we have to whip them. So the woman who's getting whipped for having eaten the figs when they were not yet fully ripened, she says, do me a favor. Tell everyone what I did wrong. Otherwise, everyone's going to think I'm just like her. So Chazal say the same thing with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I don't want everyone to think I died in the desert. Everyone else died in the desert. I did just like them. He asked Hashem, every time you mention that I have to pass away in the desert, mention what I did wrong. So they shouldn't think I'm just like them. I did something very small wrong. And another explanation Chazal tells is that Moshe Rabbeinu's sin is mentioned to tell us this is what he did wrong. And everything else he was right on. This was his one Avera. Why is this parasha over here? So Chazal say that Moshe Rabbeinu was getting hopeful. Hashem told him that he should give over the land. He said, this is the land you'll give the daughters of Tzlafchat. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, ooh, I'll give over the land to the daughters of Tzlafchat, that means I'm getting in. So Hashem said, no, go up, see the land, you're not getting in. Another explanation that Chazal tell us is that they had conquered the two nations on the eastern side of the Jordan. And the eastern side of the Jordan was to become part of the land of Israel. So Moshe Rabbeinu thought, I've led them to war against these two kings. I'm already in the land of Israel. I've gotten into the eastern side, the eastern side of the Jordan. So maybe Hashem took it back. Maybe I'm going to be let in. So Hashem said, no. Go up, take a look. I'm going to show you the whole land, but you're not going in. And Chazal say that Moshe Rabbeinu started davening. And Hashem said, just like Aaron, your brother, passed away, you two are going to have to pass away on this side of the Jordan. Moshe Rabbeinu heard he's going to pass away, so he asked Hashem, he said, Hashem, appoint someone who's going to lead the nation. Moshe Rabbeinu thought, Hashem just told me that when a man passes away, you give over his inheritance to his children. So maybe my kids will lead the Jewish people. So he said, Hashem, you're the God over all spirits. You know what's deep down inside. You know who's fit to be leader. Appoint someone to lead the Jewish people. I want someone who's going to lead them. He's going to lead them to war. He's going to lead them in learning. The nation shouldn't be like a sheep without a shepherd. And Hashem told Moshe, take Yoshua bin Nun. He's the man who has the spirit within him. And place your hand on him, to smicha, and have him stand before Elazar the Kohen and the congregation, and you command him before all of them. He's going to be the next leader. Chazal tells us, why did Yoshua merit to be the next leader? What was he so special?
Because it says he never departed from Moshe's side.
So one understanding Chazal tells us is, it says Yoshua bin Nun nar lo yomish mitoch ha'ol. Yoshua bin Nun was a lad, so to speak. He never left the tent. He was always there learning. He always was by Moshe's side learning from him. If you want to learn, you got to stick to it. Chazal tells us, Adam ki yomus boel. We learned this 2 weeks ago. Zos HaTorah, how do you acquire Torah? Adam ki yomus ba'al. If a person dies in the tent, you don't have to die to learn Torah, but you have to put everything you got into it. There's no easy way. If a person's going to try leaning back and taking breaks and doing it easy, he's not going to get there. He might get somewhere, but he's not going to get to where he could get. The actual acquiring of the Torah is only with toil, with all our strength. Now, we've discussed many times the halacha and Shulchan Aruch that a person has to take breaks in his learning. Part of learning is knowing when to stop and take a break. Without that, a person doesn't succeed in learning. A person needs a certain amount of breaks. But we're talking about what he needs, not beyond that. Chazal tells another understanding why Yoshua... Oh, we're out of time. Is this it?